This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. A few years ago, Illinois doubled the motor fuel tax rate from 19 cents a gallon to 38 cents. That money is used for road construction, so in an effort to keep pace with rising costs, they also created automatic inflation increases for that tax. But this year, with gas prices hitting records, Illinois lawmakers voted to temporarily suspend that inflation increase. So, from July through December of this year, Illinois drivers will be saving, wait for it, 2.2 cents per gallon. Maybe if you drive a gas guzzler, you can put your 2.2 cents in a piggy bank, and come January, you'll have extra money, enough extra money for a lunch at a drive-thru. Regardless, the meager savings has not stopped politicians from claiming mega credit for the tax pause, as can be heard in this campaign ad from Governor J.B. Pritzker.
What does Governor Pritzker's budget mean for you?
J.B. froze the gas tax. It means relief for us, not the oil companies.
But members of the Illinois General Assembly and the governor were not content to play up the pause in campaign ads. They also wanted gas stations to make sure drivers knew at least something about the freeze. They required a sign to be affixed to every gas pump in the state in bold print, measuring 4 by 8 inches, reading, "As of July 1st, 2022, the state of Illinois has suspended the inflation adjustment to the motor fuel tax through December 31st, 2022. The price on this pump should reflect the suspension of the tax increase." End quote. Failure to comply can be punished with a fine of $500 per gas station per day. This is not sitting right with some gas station operators, so they filed a civil rights lawsuit against the state. In a few minutes, we'll talk with a law professor about some of the legal issues in this case. But joining me now is Josh Sharp, CEO of the Illinois Fuel and Retail Association. The group brought the lawsuit along with Saunders Oil Company and Freedom Oil Company. Josh, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So, Josh, just briefly, for listeners who may not be familiar, what is the Illinois Fuel and Retail Association?
Sure. Our association is really a trade group for members engaged in fuel retailing in Illinois or the convenience store business. We represent everyone from large chains that your listeners have probably heard of, from Casey's and Love's down to little small mom-and-pop shops together. There's about 5,000 locations across the state that we represent.
So basically gas stations and convenience stores. So what is the objection of members to this signage requirement?
I really think that they just feel very offended. I think that they are being compelled to speak almost on the state of Illinois' behalf about this tax delay, which is really what it is. I know some people have characterized it as a freeze, but talk more about that later, but this tax will be reimposed again on January 1st. And they could face possible, you know, criminal penalties for not displaying the sign. I think that's a huge part of this lawsuit. Other retailers who weren't similarly situated, who are similarly situated with us, grocers, for example, they simply have to make their best effort to talk about the grocery tax being frozen, but they're not subjected to criminal fines and penalties, whereas we are. So I think for them, that's really an important piece of this case, is they just feel that they've really been, like I said, put out there almost on an island with their own sort of separate statute when it comes to this policy. And we're going to court to stop it.
The lawsuit does note, it sort of quotes one of State Representative Mike Zaleski, of a Democrat from Riverside, sort of talking about one of the reasons that he thought that the sticker was a good idea. I don't know if you want to talk about that. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think he said that maybe Illinois motorists will, I think, gaze upon the pump and read about all the good things we did, meaning the General Assembly. You know, your next guest can maybe opine on that a little bit more than I can. I'm not a lawyer, but generally if the, you know, the General Assembly or the government's going to interfere with your First Amendment rights, there needs to be a compelling government interest to do that. There's no compelling government interest here. There's certainly a political interest. There's an election right around the corner, which I think is what this is all about, but there's not a compelling government interest. Of course, there's mandated signage on a lot of our pumps, everything from octane ratings to, you know, fire safety stickers. We don't object to that. We get that. There is an overriding interest the government has there in not seeing, you know, gas stations catch on fire. But there's no real interest here in forcing all of our members to essentially become a courier for a state-sponsored message about delaying a tax increase. That's not our job, and we don't want to be subjected to you know, fines and criminal penalties for not doing that.
I suppose to take the other side, the argument could be that the, you know, the sticker is meant to make sure that customers are making sure their gas station operators are following the law, right? Not charging that tax.
Well, you could make that case, but you have to realize the gas tax isn't changing at all. There's no change come July 1. The gas tax stays as it is. All of the General Assembly has done is, again, delay the tax increase until January 1st. So I don't think motorists should really be looking for a change at the pump because the price isn't, the tax isn't going down at all. And I think the other side of that coin would be, well, then where has the required signage been when the gas tax has gone up? The state of Illinois is not exactly eager to let everybody know that, you know, 3 years in a row now, Illinois' gas taxes have gone up and up and up.
You know, stay with this devil's advocate idea. I think, you know, some people might be wondering what's the big deal about this sign? It's not though, like it says, you know, thank Governor Pritzker for these savings, yeah. Vote Democratic on election day, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also the very practical matter of a $500 per day per dispenser fine. I mean, even if you just put away, you know, the sort of free speech arguments, it could get very expensive for our members of, let's say someone, you know, removes the sign or defaces the sign. It's not just $500 per day per location. It's $500 per day per dispenser. You know, if you have 8 dispensers at a location, that can add up very quickly if, you know, you were to come out and get, you know, inspected by who would ever be enforcing this mandate, which we're not exactly, you know, even sure who that would be. I imagine, you know, Department of Revenue, Department of Agriculture, local police. But again, like I said, even if you just don't talk about the free speech aspect of it, a lot of our members just simply don't want to subject themselves to, you know, the kind of high penalties that this law imposes.
Oh my gosh, I'm thinking of that massive new gas station travel store on 55 near Pontiac. Yeah. The name is escaping.
Wally's?
Yes, they have what like 1,000 pumps, yeah, out there. So
yeah,
all right,
it would add up very much. It would be an expensive fine for Wally, no doubt.
All right, Josh Sharp, thank you for joining us today on the 21st Show.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Josh Sharp is the CEO of the Illinois Fuel and Retail Association. And joining us now to take a broader look at the issues here is Vikram Amar, Dean of the University of Illinois College of Law. Vic, welcome back to the 21st Show to you.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation briefly, you have a comment about this, we can take your call at 800-222-9455. So, Vic, you recently wrote about this lawsuit for the blog Verdict, and you say at least on the federal constitutional issues in this case, and there are some state claims, I don't know if you want to talk about those or not, but on the federal questions, you think their chances of winning are not zero, but they're also not great. Why is that?
So, first of all, I wrote the column before the lawsuit was filed, but I have looked at the complaint, which was filed in state rather than federal court. But as you point out, it raises claims both under the U.S. Constitution and under the Illinois Constitution. So I can't really speak too much to the Illinois Constitution. And let me say at the outset that I actually am quite sympathetic to and feel for Josh's organization and their members, because I'm not a big fan of political stunts like this. But there's lots of things that government shouldn't be doing that it has the legal authority to do. So if we focus just technically on the likelihood of success on the two federal claims, I think if the claims got to the higher federal courts, they would be unlikely to succeed. And so let me just describe what the two arguments are. And I think both of them were fleshed out by Josh. One is that gas stations are being treated differently than other entities like grocery stores, and they're being singled out. And so there's a claim brought under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The problem there is that the U.S. Supreme Court has made very clear that outside the context of racial discrimination and gender discrimination and a few other things, government is free to treat some businesses differently than others. Government taxes some businesses much more than others. I mean, gas is subject to a special tax that groceries are not, et cetera. So for differential treatment across different industries, the test that the courts apply is incredibly generous. It's called minimum rationality review. And there has not been a case in almost 100 years where the Supreme Court has used that in the commercial setting to invalidate unequal treatment of different businesses. So the inequality claim, while I think it has some moral force to it, doesn't have a lot of legal heft on the federal side. Now, the free speech claim is a little bit more complicated, because there are cases in which the U.S. Supreme Court has said that government cannot require private individuals to become the vessels or messengers for the government's speech. The most famous case is probably from the 1970s, where the Supreme Court struck down a requirement that people in bear a license plate that bore the state's motto, live free or die. And people who did not want to agree with that message felt aggrieved that they had to have that message on their car. And the US Supreme Court agreed and said, you can't condition the ability to drive a car in the state on carrying a license plate with that state's message. So the claim of compelled speech has more, behind it. But the problem here is the Supreme Court has been very reluctant to extend cases like Woolley versus Maynard, that's the license plate case, to the business setting, because as Josh pointed out, there are all kinds of other signage requirements that businesses are required to put up. They have to put up OSHA requirements about public safety and labor law requirements and consumer notices of all kinds. I mean, heck, cigarettes have to carry, cigarette packages have to carry a warning that they're gonna kill you and that there's no free speech argument that Big Tobacco has against that very message that's contra to their whole industry. So that's why I say it's a bit of an uphill climb here under the case law that the Supreme Court has laid down.
I know this relates back to that New Hampshire live free or die case, but couldn't gas stations add a second sticker that says, we think the above sign is a bunch of baloney and it's only saving you 2.2 cents per gallon?
They could, and that would be completely protected by the First Amendment, and Illinois could not punish a gas station for putting a little bumper sticker, or in this case, a pump sticker, next to the placard, which is another reason why the compelled speech claim is a little harder. Compelled speech is more likely to be problematic under the Constitution if the compelled speaker is unable to distance herself from the government's message. Now, again, in Woolley versus Maynard, the license plate case, New Hampshire case, the driver could have put a bumper sticker with an arrow towards the license plate that says, I don't believe in this crap. And yet still the driver won the lawsuit. So the ability to distance yourself from the government's message isn't always going to defeat the compelled speech claim, but it makes it harder for the compelled speech claim to succeed. I'll just say one other thing that's relevant. In general, this Supreme Court is very reluctant to peer behind the face of a law that government enacts to look at what the real motive is. So while I have no doubt that Josh is right, that this law was motivated by a desire for government to try to advertise and get some political credit for this, on its face, the law, the requirement does not speak in those terms. And the offhand statement of one legislator who may not represent all the legislators in Springfield is not going to be good enough to overcome the facial neutrality of the law. And as you've already pointed out, on its face, the law could be designed to make sure that consumers are preventing gas retailers from unnecessarily charging them the two cents extra per gas. It's part of an effort to police or monitor compliance on the gas retailer side. So, but this Supreme Court is not one that looks behind laws to see whether they're improperly motivated. Indeed, in the famous leaked opinion from the Supreme Court in the abortion Dobbs case, one of the underappreciated aspects of that draft opinion is that it says we don't really look behind anti-abortion laws to see if they kind of reflect an animosity towards women. We just look at the face of the law and what it does.
Pour one out for legislative intent, I guess, is what you're saying there.
That's right. Legislative intent, the Supreme Court has said, is a very dicey basis for courts to review and invalidate laws.
Vikram Amar is the Dean of the University of Illinois College of Law. Vic, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your expertise and perspective on this.
Thank you so much.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow. We're going to talk about the campaign for Illinois Secretary of State, some of the issues and candidates there. We're also going to speak with author Jennifer Close, who was raised in Illinois and has written a book set in Illinois. It's been getting rave reviews, including in the New York Times. It's called Marrying the Ketchups. It's a novel. We're going to speak with her about her work tomorrow on the program. The 21st is produced by Erica Scalise and Aiden Choate. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Want to urge you to visit our website. There you can find links to what we talked about, as well as our podcast. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just search for The 21st. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.